and I'm just going to read his bio again. Currently working for an unnamed telephone company and founder of ESIS Technology Solutions, he has been a technology enthusiast for years. The last few years have been centered around network and computer security. Carbon will be giving a presentation called Network Security Systems and Defeating Passive Network Attacks. The talk will cover an overview of network security systems such as network-based IDS, host-based IDS, and will go on to explain the implementations and detection of passive network attacks. So give a big round of applause for Carbon.
Okay, like he said, I'm Carbon. Basically, what I'm going to try to do is start out really, you know, basic level and work the way up, go from to the host base, and then work my way down to the layers to promiscuous detection, and talk about a little bit about active OS fingerprinting and active OS mapping. Well, I don't have a PowerPoint, so bear with me. Okay, we'll start off with host-based IDS. What is it? Basically, it's just a system that sits there. It can detect or log malicious activities within a host. You'll find these in several forms. One, probably the most insecure way, would be just a software, you know, just basic software that runs. You can see the process, but it will log malicious activity. Another one would be kernel modules, or you could build it in the kernel. Personally, I like that the best because it's a lot harder to, you know, hack or find out that it's running. It also can run faster. And the third one is stealth services or daemons that actually run in the background. Those also are kind of hard to detect unless the attacker actually knows, you know, that you're running this specific IDS, and then he can find out, you know, a backdoor or whatnot to actually access and break it down. Basically, a host-based IDS, which, by the way, is intrusion detection system, in case like you're confused, basically can act in several ways. The first one's system monitoring, which is pretty, you know, self-explanatory. It just detects malicious activity straight from the OS that you're running. The other one would be checking file integrity. You're running checksums to maybe the logs or however you have it set up to see if there's a difference. And the third one, which is probably the most obvious, is just simple log analysis. For instance, you know, syslogd, you can actually analyze the data within that and see if your system has been compromised. So basically, I have an example here. User A runs a shell script trying to break root on user bin suid perl. Var log messages receives root attempt. Host-based IDS analyzes var log messages, sees the root attempt, and flags it for further analysis by the administrator. However, the problem with recently implemented host-based IDSs is, number one, they can only detect active or in-system attacks. So it's going to be that system that it's going to detect attacks from. That's a pretty big problem, depending on what size your network is and how many hosts you have per network segment and whatnot. The second one, and this is pretty much true with all these, is hardware intensive. Depending on how big your network is, how many hosts you have on that network, you're going to have a lot of data being processed by however you do it, a centralized server or whatnot. That's going to really overhaul the system. And in some cases, you know, you're going to have to use really high-end hardware like Pentium 3 on up, you know, duals. And that can definitely be a problem, especially if you're a smaller business and you don't have the money to afford that. Or if you're just somebody who's in their basement playing around, obviously you're not going to want to go out and spend that much money on a host-based IDS system. And the third one would be cost effectiveness. You know, just as I said, it's kind of a basis-by-basis type of deal. You know, if you're just in your basement and you're just playing around, you're not going to want to go spend, you know, the money on a new computer, as well as perhaps depending on what you're going to use. Like if you're going to use a commercial host-based IDS, then obviously it's going to cost money. But there are really good open source host-based IDSs as well. So, and this brings me to a little project that I'm trying to get started. I'm not the greatest coder, so I'm kind of looking for help. But basically, one day I was thinking, you know, well, I like to run a host-based IDS, you know, on a 486, and I should be able to do that. You know, I should be able to run it on pretty much anything. So I came up with this little client and server called Dendrite. And basically what you have here is you have a client that you install on every single machine that you want to be, you know, have a host-based IDS. And then you take, let's say perhaps your biggest server, the most powerful server, and you put this, the actual server end of Dendrite on it. And what happens is once you, the first time you implement this, the server will actually, the clients will actually talk to this, to the actual server and say, okay, these are what the logs look like. You know, it'll send all logs and you can fully customize that. You don't have to just use syslog deal, you know, logs and send them that way. You can use other, there are tons of stuff that'll actually do a more in-depth log analysis and whatnot per a client. And then what'll happen is on these clients, if anything changes, if the file size of a log changes, if it has been accessed, if it has been manipulated in some way, will actually tunnel through encryption. That's kind of like they did blind couriers, and I thought that would be a really good implementation within the host-based IDS that I'm trying to work on. You can actually tunnel this to the server end of Dendrite, and what it'll do is it'll actually compare, it'll run checksums with the pre-cached, thank you, with the pre-cached logs and data with the new logs and data, and it'll actually see, it'll say, you know, it'll siphon through it all and say, okay, yeah, here we do have some kind of malicious activity. It'll then flag it, and it'll send it on to an administrator. Now, you can do this in several ways. You know, you can have a GUI, like a web interface. One that's really popular is SendMail, you know, just through mail, SMTP and whatnot. But the whole point of me doing that was that because of you're just basically streaming pretty much, you know, trivial amounts of data, and all you're doing is running checksums on that cache of the logs, then you're not really doing much processing power. And at the same rate, it's still pretty reliable. And that's basically what I'm at right now. I can do some of the code. The only problem is I'm not too sure, like, what kind of triggering mechanism I need. You know, I need to find a better way to say, okay, logs have been, you know, manipulated, send them down. So that's basically where I'm at there. But I've talked to some people, and they seem to think it's a good idea too, but, you know, hopefully I can do something about it. Okay, the next one will be honeypots. I'm just going to briefly go over this. Basically, honeypots, all they are, they're sophisticated systems, or they can be just strictly, you know, simulations. And basically, all this does is it kind of, basically, it's just, okay, let's profile, you know, a hacker or an attacker. And what'll happen is, you know, these guys will get on the system, they'll actually think it's a real system, and they'll start, you know, pulling their tricks, when in reality, they're being logged, I mean, completely. I mean, everything's being logged. This, as I said, it's good for actual profiling, or simply if you want to learn how these people are getting into your network or how they're getting into your system, you can actually, by using a honeypot, you can find out exactly what they're doing. Some of the common users of honeypots, of course, are like law enforcement, government agencies, corporations, and security professionals. Honeypots have gotten really big in the last few years. They're also really fun to play with. So I'm trying to think of do you know of any open source honeypots right offhand? Anybody? No? Okay, well, we'll just leave that alone then. Go search on PacketStorm or something. And the common problems with honeypots, once again, hardware intensive, only this is much on a much larger scale, because when you think about it, not only now are you just running checksums and whatnot on logs, but you're actually basically sitting there and seeing everything they're doing. So that can take a lot of processor power. Number two, it has to be inserted and implemented well. If these guys find out that you're running a honeypot, they're gone. There's no doubt about it. You know, there was some honeypots out there a couple years ago that people actually found a way to get through them, and they were actually using that, and they could just quickly find out if it's a honeypot or not and then get out. But then again, you know, it's going to depend which kind of software you use. The third one that I'm going to just talk about briefly is you got to be careful what you give out. I actually heard a story from somebody one time about how they had implemented a honeypot, but it wasn't just a strict simulation. It was actually simulating the actual file system and whatnot that was on the computer before they installed it. Now, this is kind of a problem if you have, you know, data that obviously you don't want them to see on that system already. So you got to be careful what actual data you're falsifying. You know, if it's real data, you can still get in trouble here if they find anything very useful. Are there any questions or yet so far? Because I have no really format as to questions, and I don't want people to forget their questions if they have any. So are there any questions? No? Okay, I'll go on. Now we get to network-based IDS, or network-based intrusion detection. What is it? Basically, it's a system that can passively read all traffic within a network to decide if perhaps there's some malicious activity going on, or if there's just like anomalies. It can search packets or patterns in packets, et cetera, et cetera. It's pretty thorough. Common end users for NIDSs would be one, GUI. You'll see a lot of web-based or sometimes real-time interfaces for NIDS. Also log tunneling, you know, sort of like what I was talking about with Dendrite. It'll just send them to a server or another client through whatever means, cron-D, you know, it could be whatever. And then SMTP notification, where it actually mails, like the administrator says, hey, you know, we've gotten some kind of anomaly on the network. You might want to go check it out. The problems, once again, hardware intensive. It's pretty much the problem with these. With network-based intrusion detections, you're going to have major processing as well, and probably even more than host-based, because when you think about it, that's a – depending on how, if you have a large network and it's not segmented, and you have just one network intrusion detection system on that network, that's a lot of data. Especially if it's you have a lot of people online or a lot of people on the network, that's going to take a lot of processor power as well as a lot of disk space. So that's definitely a big problem. Also, network intrusion systems. They can limit the use of encryption greatly. You know, obviously, if you start encrypting almost all your data on the network, your network intrusion detection system isn't going to work because it's not going to be able to read the packet and say, oh, okay, yeah, you know, that's an anomaly because everything's encrypted. So that's a problem. So you kind of got to decide what you know data you want to encrypt if you do, in fact, want to. Also, it can increase depending on what kind of network intrusion detection system it is, it can greatly increase the load on traffic. And once again, that depends on the size of the network. And the perhaps like the invasion, which I'm not really going to get into, but it's vulnerable to denial of service attacks. In fact, most attackers, if they know that there's a network intrusion detection system on the network, that's the first thing they'll do is they'll basically try to perform a denial of service, because once that network intrusion detection system's out, they can get on your network. And you know, as an administrator, you'll say, okay, yeah, fine, somebody DOSed us. But you might not necessarily say, okay, yeah, fine, he DOSed us, and now he's in our network. So that's definitely one of the ways that people try to knock out network intrusion detection systems. Just a little example of how an IDS would work would be such as a host A does a port scan on network A. The network intrusion detection system sees the port scan request on the network. The NIDS realizes it's a port scan. As you can see, you know, it has to know protocols and the form of packets and whatnot. You can't have a stupid network intrusion detection system. It has to know the protocols, and it has to know, you know, yes, this is fine, yes, this is no. There have been a lot of problems with certain ones because of that factor. It's, you know, how are you going to monitor TCP attacks if your network intrusion detection system doesn't know the first thing about TCP? You know, that's definitely a problem. You got to make sure that it knows all the protocols that it's looking for. Okay, now we're going to get into some of the port mapping and OS fingerprinting. We'll start out with active OS mapping or active port mapping. That probably the most widely known implementation would be Nmap. I'm sure most of you or a lot of you have heard of Nmap. Common scans for Nmap has all of these. TCP, or sometimes it's called TCP Connect, and that's where you're actually completing like a three-way handshake. You're sending a SYN, replying with a SYN ACK, and then the ACK, hence ports open. Then there's the stealth scan, where you're actually, you don't finish the three-way handshake. Basically, all you do is, you know, SYN, and then you receive a SYN ACK, and then that's it. You don't actually complete the three-way handshake. Once again, you got to reply, ports open. The other ones, and these are probably less, the FIN packet and NULL scan, I don't know, I guess certain people use it, but it's not as popular. And basically, all you're doing with a FIN packet and NULL scan is you send a FIN packet, and all you're going to do is, if the server doesn't reply with an RST or reset packet, well, then you know the port's open. And then lastly, you have the UDP scan, which probably a lot of you know of. And basically, if there's a lack of an ICMP unreachable response, you know the port's open. But there's problems, obviously, with active active port mapping. Basically, it's easily detectable by a network intrusion detection system. You know, you are sending packets out on the wire, point blank. You're sending things out, they're going to catch you. The other problem is the source is obviously easily detectable, you know, verified. You're sending out a source and a from, you know, a to and where. You're going to be able to say, okay, well, we got this packet, you know, this Nmap scan from, you know, whatever, host E. You know, you're going to be able, they're going to be able to find where it came from. Another form of checking for vulnerabilities is banner checking. Some of you have probably also heard of this. It's basically where, to give you an idea, you find out that somebody has, you know, FTP open. So you FTP and it says, you know, welcome to our FTP server. We're running WooFTP 260. Then you say, oh, 260 is exploitable. And then hence you try to remotely access that computer. And the problem with this is any smart administrator is going to change its banners. You know, I mean, it's not hard to do. You know, I mean, it's just trivial kinds of stuff. So that's very unreliable to try to go just using banner checking. The other thing about this is a lot of, probably you might have heard of a lot of those automated attacks, a lot of script kiddies and defacers use that. A lot of times it's like banner check, they use banner checking and whatnot, as well as like RPC queries and that sorts of thing. Okay, anybody lost yet? No? Everybody good? Okay. Now we're going to go to active OS fingerprinting. This has gotten a lot more popular the last couple years. I can't remember exactly when Nmap started implementing it, but I don't think it was too long ago. Well, I'm not too sure. Basically, there are several methods on active fingerprinting, but common ones are you can find out by fragmentation handling, which is kind of self-explanatory. You know, you're actually finding out how does it handle fragments of packets and data. TCP windowing or TCP advertising windowing. Basically, you know, what does this OS? This OS has a windowing of, I'm just going to make up a number right now, like 40. You know, oh well, 40 is a common you know window for you know Windows NT. But basically, in essence, every OS handles its packets differently. Hence the name fingerprinting, OS fingerprinting. Now the problems, though, are once again active OS. You know, fingerprinting is easily detectable by network intrusion detection systems because you're sending packets. They have a to and from. You know, they're going to be able to find out where it came from as well, the origin. As well as active OS fingerprinting has been found to be very unreliable simply because of the fact of the actual nature of a TCP packet. If you know anything, you know that there's a lot of headers and whatnot. You know, there's a lot of data, and it's kind of hard to actually take them and compare them and find out exactly which OS it's going to be. The other thing is with, like, TCP windowing, Windows is really bad. It'll change. I've heard somebody told me, as well as Cisco routers are really crazy about that kind of thing. So that's kind of tough, too. Okay, so now we're going to go into, obviously, promiscuous mode. This is, although this has been around, don't let anybody fool you. I mean, it's gotten a lot of hype in the last, like, 2 years. But this stuff has been around since TCP/IP. This has been around for that long. So this stuff has existed since the birth of, you know, IP version 4 and whatnot. Basically, with promiscuous mode, you're setting your interface card, your NIC, you know, your Ethernet card, into promiscuous mode, which basically means that it can now see all traffic routed within the network segment, as well as it's not sending any traffic out. So it's basically in stealth mode, you know. Nobody can actually see it. Why would you want to do that? Basically because you can gather passwords, you know, especially through telnet sessions because it's clear text, as well as you can, with tools like Siphon, you can actually find out what OS it's running, what ports it's running, you know, what actually operating system it is. You can get very specific when you do actual passive attacks, although you might not want to call it passive attacks, but depending on what your motivation is. So passive port mapping. Okay, basically what you're doing is you're listening on the three, on, like, let's say two hosts, or two client, you know, host A, host B, you're in the middle. It's like a man in the middle attack. But all you're doing is you're listening to their three-way handshake, you know. Simplified would be, you know, let's say they're just telnet. They telnet, you know, login, and they type in Bob. You're going to see login Bob. And then password, you know, and it's going to show you the password. Because you're actually monitoring like all the data that those two hosts are actually sending out to each other. So what are the problems? Okay, the first problem would be spoofing can occur, especially SYNAC packets. However, I've been told that you can overcome that by actually monitoring the TCP state of the actual system. And also, you know, how else is there a problem? Encryption, once again. You know, if they're running encryption and you're running a, you know, like, let's say SniffIt, you know, some good that's going to do, all you're going to see is googly ga. You know, it's just going to be nothing. It's just going to look like, I don't know, Chinese or something. So how can we actually find this and actually, you know, say, okay, well, how can we actually improve upon this and check this out? Well, it's kind of actually a in-depth process. I think I'll probably wait to explain that here because I want to get into passive OS fingerprinting to kind of give you an idea about how that is. Sort of like active, passive OS fingerprinting can basically it can determine the OS in several factors. Once again, we have TCP windowing, our TCP advertised windowing, the default time to live, the TTL. You can also determine it by that because every OS has its own default TTL. Also, the don't fragment bit, which I'm not going to get into that, and you'll see why in a second because it's not really, you know, not that great. And then the TOS or type of service, you know, what kind of services it's running. Oh, you know, this is running back orifice. Well, geez, I don't think it's going to be a Linux box, but you never know, you know. But it's probably going to be a Windows box of some sort. So what are the problems of those methods? Okay, well, with TCP windowing, like I said, the window size can constantly change, and Windows is horrible at this. It'll constantly change the actual advertised window. And like I said, Cisco routers will do the same as well. Time to live, the default TTL. Okay, the biggest problem with this is, obviously, once again, just like banner checking, they can change their default TTL. An example of this would be like in you know, Linux, that file is just proxysnet IP version 4 IP underscore default underscore TTL. You know, that's all you have to do. You just go in there, edit whatever default TTL you want. So that's unreliable. The don't fragment bit, the reason why I said don't worry about that is because actually most OSs use it. So it's like, yeah, sure, if they're running an obscure OS, you might say, oh, okay, well, but most of them will actually run the don't fragment bit, so it's not that big of a deal. Type of service, the reason why this can be unreliable is obviously because it's based more on the service that the actual host is running and not the actual OS. So that can be deceiving. And those are actually, you know, once again, depending on what kind of OS and what kind of software you're running, that still can be a really bad problem. Especially like Port Sentry, you know, it'll actually say that it has everything. You know, it doesn't matter what OS. It'll say you have back orifice. It'll say you have like a root shell on binded to port 31337. You know, all that kind of good stuff. But we've found out that if you combine actually like all four of these techniques or more, you know, that it actually becomes very reliable. Granted, it's not going to be as quick. You know, with Nmap, you just type it and it goes. With passive, you actually got to wait because it's the software, depending on like Siphon, you know, you kind of got to wait, kind of has to hash out, you know, and say, okay, well, it could be this, it could be this. No, it's this. So, but when you combine them, it actually becomes a very powerful tool. Okay, so we're here to passive detection options, right? We want to know how can we defeat this stuff. For one, we can start at the hardware layer, you know, the physical. For one, switches. Unlike hubs, you know, switches actually don't broadcast all its data to every interface on a network. It has path determination. It'll actually try to go to the quickest path in which that computer resides. So with that actually implemented, you're going to have a lot less chance, you know, of them being able to actually sniff anything. It's not 100% sure, and it obviously depends on what kind of switch you're using. If you're using El Cheapo Generico, you know, it's probably not going to work as good. If you're using a Cisco, it might work a lot better. The other one would be segmentation and subnets. A lot of people don't actually think of these two when they're implementing a promiscuous detection. They're actually very useful. With segmenting, obviously if you segment your network into several different places and that attacker comes in the one segment, he's only, assuming that you don't have any encryption and you're using Telnet, he's only at that time going to be able to access any data through that segment. You know, so that's definitely an actual plus to actually segment and subnet as far as you know, compared to actually having just one large network. And as well as, you know, obviously that segmenting and subnetting can have its benefits bandwidth-wise and all that kinds of stuff. Okay, so what about encryption? Encryption's good. I mean, it'll work. But once again, what you have is, let's say you're using encryption, that's fine. What if you have a network IDS? That's a problem, right? Because obviously if your data is, you know, going to be encrypted, well, your network IDS isn't going to be very useful. So basically, when you're going to use encryption, you really need to think about it. Should I take computers that I absolutely need to have their data encrypted, right? Maybe try to segment them on their own network and encrypt all data that you need. Or perhaps, you know, just pick the protocols that you need encrypted, you know. Let's not use, you know, just go wooby on the encryption, you know. Let's try just to keep it to what we really need, and that'll also help. But when you're thinking about encryption, you got to remember, you know, what else, what kind of other stuff do I have on this wire, and is it going to affect it? And with, if you have a network IDS, obviously it's going to affect it because it can't properly see all the traffic. It'll have a heyday. And then also PDS, promiscuous detection systems. A lot of you have probably heard anti-sniff. That's probably the most popular one. Basically, what you're doing when you use a program like this, I'll give an example. Let's say your PDS, I just call it PDS because it's shorter. Let's say, okay, you install anti-sniff. What's going to happen is the system, the PDS host, will basically send ICMP timing packets to all the clients or all the hosts within your network, you know, wherever the broadcast reaches. All right. Now, what's going to happen right after that, it's also going to send out packets with false IP addresses. Now, this is key because if you kind of remember right, what happens when you're in promiscuous mode, you're going to see all traffic. It doesn't matter. Okay. Now, what happens if a NIC's in, you know, normal mode? Well, it's only going to see the traffic meant for it, right? So what's going to happen is, as these false IPs are circling the network, the other clients that don't, just normal, are going to say, oh, not mine, not mine, not mine. But the guy with the promiscuous NIC is going to say, ooh, okay, you know. So what's going to happen is that PDS is basically going to say, okay, let's send out another ICMP timing packet. All the other clients, you know, about the same. And here comes that packet to that promiscuous guy. He's like, ooh, okay. And then that packet, the timing packet's just going to detect latency on that NIC. And it's going to bring it back to the PDS, and it's going to say, this guy's basically, in a sense, lagged, you know, and basically busted right there. That's all it takes is just basically two ICMP timing packets and packet injection with false IPs. It's pretty simple. A problem with this, and here we go again, is PDSs may conflict with network intrusion detections as well. If you have a PDS sending out false IP packets, your network IDS might not be happy about it. So it takes some research, and it takes some research to actually implement it, to work it out. And if all possible, actually try to get a combination, you know. I don't know about it right now. It's because, see, there's no standard. That's the biggest problem with this right now, is there is no standard. It's hard to get one IDS to talk to another and whatnot. And so that kind of really degrades when you want, okay, you want promiscuous detection, you want a network IDS, and you want host-based IDS, and they're all, like, fighting over each other because they're all doing weird stuff to each other, you know, so that's definitely a problem. So basically, that's it. And basically, with the conclusion, all I'm saying is you want to make sure you implement this as soon as possible, right? If your network's been laying there for 2 years and you suddenly put all this stuff on it, chances are it might already have been compromised, and it's not going to do any good. So time of implementation is, you know, number one. You want to try, as soon as that network comes on, you want to implement this right at the beginning. That way you know, unless you have some evil employee, that you know that it's okay at that moment, and then you can move on. And then basically the other thing is like what I said, you want to make sure that you research and find out what's going to best work for you and what's going to work for your network, you know? Let's not, you don't have to spend all this money and just, you know, be unhappy with it. It does take some time and it takes some research to look at this stuff and actually decide, okay, well, this doesn't work with this. Let's try something else. And you just want to construct a topology that's, you know, going to fit whatever you need. Don't go overblown either. You know, if you don't need a network intrusion detection system, don't do it unless you're doing, you know, research, like I said. But just try to keep it as simple as possible. And with that said, I'm pretty much done. Does anyone have any questions? No?
Sort of.
All right. Well, see, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, definitely. That, in fact, you know, that's kind of my favorite thing is like kernel modules or built-in kernel because it's a lot harder to detect, as well as, you know, break. So yeah, that's definitely what I would like. And not to, but see, the only problem with that is then you're assuming you're running Unix. And yeah, you know. I mean, if you can somehow recompile NT kernel, I think you're probably a millionaire. But, yeah, so that's definitely the problem. Any more? No? Okay. Well, I thank you for coming, and have a nice day.